The following show is a replay of KTQA Daily Briefing. For more information, please call 253-330-8821 or visit us online at daily.ktqa.org. Good afternoon. It's Thursday on April 2nd, 2020. It's 3 p.m. and it's time for the KTQA Daily Briefing. How you doing, Becky?
As usual, pretty well.
Still doing okay.
I'm not dressed as Superman today, but
no, today is a lot less confusing around the house than today was. I mean, once I figured out what was up and it was Spirit Week number 73,000, it was okay. But, yeah, so...
just normal clothes today, you know, hoodies, jeans,
yep,
t-shirts.
Pretty much. So let's get down to the briefing.
Sure. As always, state-level updates on COVID-19 can be found online in multiple languages at coronavirus.wa.gov. Health department officials are staffing a coronavirus Q&A line 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days a week at 1-800-525-0127. For interpreters in other languages, press pound when they answer and say your language. Dialing 311 from your phone in Tacoma will get you the City of Tacoma's non-emergency information line, and dialing 211 from your phone in Tacoma helps connect you to community resources statewide through United Way. You can also visit wa211.org online.
Moving on to Washington State, Washington's Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction has stated that an April Fool's joke circulating on social media suggesting that the governor is requiring all students to repeat this year's grade next year is not true. Such a declaration has not been made. Schools remain closed at this time. That's a fairly cruel joke, if you ask me. The Employment Security Department of Washington State has publicized that systems are being updated to reflect CARES Act expansion of benefits by mid-April, at which point those eligible will receive retroactive payments for both the weekly benefit amount owed as well as the additional $600 per week. Unemployment benefits will be paid from the time people separated from their job or otherwise became eligible under the CARES Act, not from the time the application was submitted or approved. Information and updates can be found at esd.wa.gov. Some recipients of basic food assistance will see an increase in their benefits through DSHS. Recipients will get the difference between their regular monthly benefit and the maximum amount for their household size. Households that already receive the maximum benefit amount will not see an increase. Individuals who are just now applying for benefits in March and April will receive the maximum household benefit amount once their application is approved. Benefits do not have to be paid back and do not affect any recipient's immigration status. Emergency benefits for March will show up on EBT cards on April 4th, and households who are already received their regular April benefits on April 1st through 3rd will receive the April supplement on April 4th. Those who receive their normal benefits on April 4th through 20th will receive the additional amount on the usual date they receive their benefits. Recipients can call the number on their EBT card to check the balance or access their client benefit account at www.washingtonconnection.org. The DSHS Customer Service Contact Center can be reached at 1-877-501-2233, but the department urges you to check for the latest COVID-19 benefits-related information on the agency Facebook and Twitter accounts at dshs.wa.gov. Apparently, they're phone systems are fairly overloaded right now, so I go to their website at dshs.wa.gov. The Washington Health Benefit Exchange is extending the current special enrollment period for individuals who are uninsured through May 8th. Coverage will start May 1st, 2020 for customers who enroll after April 8th. Those with questions or intent to enroll can call the Customer Support Center between 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at 1-855-923-4633. Language assistance and disability accommodations are provided at no cost. You can also visit wahealthplanfinder.org. Moving on to the City of Tacoma, the Tacoma Public Utilities is delaying a 2% rate increase on power by 3 months. The increase will go into effect July 1st, instead of April 1st.
So that's the updates that we have today. We may be breaking into news a little bit with more news a little bit later on today, because the governor is expected to hold a press conference at about 5 p.m. And so we'll bring you any updates if need be. Remember that you can dial 311 from the city of Tacoma to get the city of Tacoma's non-emergency information line. 211 connects you to statewide resources. Contact us by emailing us at daily@ktqa.org, and our phone number is 253-330-8821. You can call us and leave a message, or you can text us.
We've received today has been a banner day for feedback, and we're still working through the feedback.
So we appreciate the feedback that we've been getting at 253-330-8821.
I see what you did there. But we will be getting back to you today. We usually don't get to begin today work for KTQA until we start on the daily briefing, and then we usually handle feedback after the recording is over. So to give you an idea on the timing there. So I don't know what's going on. You've been in a lot of meetings for your schoolwork this week. So what's going on personally from a public school perspective?
Well, schools are now under direction from the governor and the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction to continue with remote instruction opportunities for all public school kids. So we can't just say, all right, schools are closed, so we're leaving you all hanging. And so there's been a big push in a lot of our districts to come up with the plans and relay those to the students, to families. There have been, as we mentioned a little bit earlier this week, deployment of loaner laptops from lots of school districts in Tacoma. They've just started that, starting, of course, with upper grades. And then, you know, next week, elementary school kids can go in and get laptops if your family doesn't have a laptop. That's kind of what the school districts around us are all doing right now, scrambling to get kids tech.
So even when I'm asking you how your day is going, you give me a further briefing. That's pretty cool.
I do.
I feel pretty lucky. Accidental content, although I suspect in your case, it's not actually that accidental. I'm just asking how your day is going.
My day is going great. I've already been in 4 different Zoom meetings and gotten to help and assist lots of folks with tech and those remote learning and remote communication activities.
Well, you've had a fairly busy day. And to prove that, let's go into today's interview.
With me today is Richard Wakefield. He is a poet, a literary critic, and a professor of English at Tacoma Community College. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. I want to start a little bit with your poetry. What themes does your poetry tend to focus on?
There's a lot of variety to it because I tend to pick things up and work on them sometimes days, weeks, months, even years before they find their way into a poem. What the poetry that gets published, particularly in the books, tends to focus on rural themes, the sense of landscape and the way that landscape affects people, the way that it shapes their lives, and the ways that they shape the landscape. However, I do need to add that probably half of what I write is humorous, a whole variety of things.
Do you stick to like certain forms or styles, or do you kind of play around with different forms of writing? Are you kind of free verse, or do you stick to sonnets? Are you a real traditionalist?
It's very traditional, called the formal verse, meaning that it tends to have a very pretty strict scansion to it. Iambic pentameter, iambic tetrameter. I'm looking right now at a poem that's in anapestic tetrameter. Almost always rhymes. And when there's a departure from those things, it's usually for a very specific reason. And I found over the years, partly just because of my age and background, that seems to me what poetry should sound like. I've also found that writing under those kinds of constraints actually induces creativity, actually helps me find things that I would not otherwise have found.
Now, you had talked about that sometimes it'll be days, months, weeks, even years before a little piece of something makes it into a complete poem. But do you have any kind of like writing routine that you do? Do you wake up at 6:30 a.m. and as your coffee is cooling a little bit, sit down and do some writing? Does it strike you here and there?
When my schedule permits, which is usually summer, early fall before school really gets going, and sometimes spring when things are settling down at school a little bit, I always set aside time in the fairly late afternoon to write. And I've developed over the years a habit of making sure that I always leave something undone so that I get back to it with enthusiasm. There's something that's percolating in my brain, and then I'm eager to get back to it. So I tend to be a late afternoon writer, and it has to sort of find its way among the schoolwork and the other projects.
Interesting, that aspect of leaving something undone. I imagine that for other folks, that sense of having left something undone can provoke a lot of anxiety rather than the enthusiasm. So it's interesting to hear your perspective on that, and that leaving something undone is intentional on your part.
Yeah, it is. Actually, I go even farther than that with larger writing projects, but I'm writing an article or a chapter of a book or something like that. I actually set myself a maximum amount that I can write every day. I discover it, typically 3 pages, and then I have to stop. I stop no matter where I am, make a few notes. I discovered years ago when I was writing my dissertation, I realized that my friends who were in the same situation would sit down twice a week and write 40 pages and hate it. It seemed to me it showed up in their writing, and that it showed up in their reluctance to get back to their writing.
Mm.
I said, I'm going to be way ahead if I write 3 pages a day. If I miss a day, don't try to make that up. And the result is that I ended up just being able to do a lot of writing and to feel good about it.
Seems like a really neat approach to have something that is tested. You know, you hypothesized, you tested it out and say, hey, this kind of works for me. I like this groove. You mentioned one of the poems that you're looking at right now was in a particular scansion that I'm not familiar with. I mean, I am a student of literature in the Spanish language tradition. And so some of the different meters of traditional, American English or British English poetry are a little bit foggy for me. But did you have one that you wanted to share with us today?
Sure. Actually, it happens, as I say, that I'm looking at it right now. This is, and as I say, it's in an anapestic tetrameter, which you will recognize. It's the meter of the night before Christmas. Right? And this particular poem, it's not very long. It's called Terminal Park. And then the subtitle is An Elegy in Anapestic Tetrameter. That little note, an elegy in anapestic tetrameter, I thought was necessary because an elegy tends to be an iambic pentameter. Da-dum, 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 da-dum. And it's a very stately sort of rhythm. So I thought it was necessary to at least alert the reader that this more sprightly, playful rhythm was going to be at work here. One or two other things to say about it. So the title is Terminal Park, and Terminal Park is a place. There used to be a railway, as you may know, that ran through the Kent Valley. And at the end of it, people could ride back and forth, and there was a park at the end of that line called Terminal Park, because that's where the terminal was. And it became an actual park that people would visit to get out of town, and they'd take their families and have picnics and so on. And then there was a turntable there that would turn the engines to go back the other way. So that was a great novelty for people to just have picnics, watch these engines turn on the turntable. Now it's all overgrown and it's derelict. So the poem goes like this. Terminal Park reads the vine-covered sign where junkies and drunks reach the end of the line. Come morning, the coroner's van threads its way through under an overgrowth gone to decay. But this was a park once, the sweet countryside, a Sunday adventure where people would ride in the days of the streetcar, away from the grime and stench of the city, both ways for a dime. The place wasn't named with sardonic intent. To them, the name literally said what it meant. This was, after all, where the terminal was, and the dactyl in terminal pleased them because it mimicked the clickety-clack of the track that lullabied babies to sleep going back. And right in the center, a marvel was set. The engines were turned in a slow pirouette on a platform that carried the giants with ease in an arc of 180 degrees. But ironies happen. The auto age came, and abandonment brought a new turn on the name. The literal iron was scrapped, and the place was left unattended, a terminal case. Now derelicts shiver by fires in the dark with no return tickets from Terminal Park.
Wow. I've got goosebumps here. I've got little chills. That sort of contrast and the play on words that wasn't even intentional, but just as a matter of course of the evolution of society and culture sort of had that little pun. That universe seemed to give us and hand us that little pun right there with Terminal Park.
I agree. This is one of those situations where you just felt that the world was screaming write a poem. And then other plays like the word iron and irony, and the turning of the engines in the pirouette is a turn, of course, on the language and all of that. So Terminal Park, it didn't mean anything sinister in its day. And this happens so often, you know, when you start paying attention, the world just seems to say, look, here's a poem asking to be written.
Well, it's beautiful. What's your favorite aspect of literature to teach? Because you teach lots of different things that aren't just about poetry, but about rhetoric and composition and literature.
You know, the pleasure and fun of teaching almost anything having to do with language is so great that it's difficult to name a favorite. Last quarter, just finished up the Shakespeare course. And I never get over the pleasure, the fun, the excitement of leading people into something that they've been interested in or curious about for a long time, maybe felt a little bit intimidated by, and then helping them, I hope, find that they can be comfortable with it and that it opens up their lives in ways that they perhaps hadn't even expected. But the same thing happens with teaching composition. I teach a course called The Bible as Literature, where we look at Bible stories for their literary form and technique. And very similar things happen. Just about every class works that way for me.
So is there a particular poet or author that really inspires you? Or is it, as you said, everything that has to do with language just as one of those ways to tickle the intellect?
Well, when you get in the habit of looking at language the same way as the habit of looking at experience in detail, there's just endless richness to it. However, I was lucky. I grew up in a household where there was a lot of poetry. My dad and I would recite poetry together, and it was often just the sort of noisy stuff that kids naturally like, Rudyard Kipling. Also, though, there was a lot of poetry that was substantial stuff. So Robert Frost was in the background. He ended up being the subject of my dissertation and my first book and a number of articles that I wrote then later. And I just found that these were endless. These things, when literature is at its best, it gets bigger the deeper you go into it. I'll say, for example, when I teach the Shakespeare course, every quarter, I discover things. My students teach me things. They ask questions, and suddenly I say, "My gosh, that play, that little passage of that play, is bigger than I ever realized, even after 50 years."
Some of us may be finding ourselves with some unexpected time on our hands this month. I imagine that you are, if doing any teaching after the spring break, it will be all remote at this point. And some of us might be thinking about taking up some new hobbies. Do you have any advice for getting started on writing or on reading particular books, especially for those that may be out of practice or a little bit intimidated by either of those two activities?
Sure. The first thing that you need to do with any of this stuff is make it fun for yourself. You know, we have this notion that writers need to suffer. And what's the old saying? I can't remember. Was it Virginia Woolf, one of the major writers who said, writing is simple. You just sit down at a desk and open a vein. I mean, it's fine. We do need to sometimes dig deeply and discover things that we perhaps kept out of sight. However, you can't live that way, or at least you shouldn't. So find a way to have fun. I would suggest, for example, starting with an imitation. Find a little poem. I don't care, Dr. Seuss or Ogden Nash. They're fun. And start substituting words. Steal the rhymes and write a new poem with the same rhyme scheme and the same meter to it. You will discover things that you never dreamed were possible within yourself through that process. The old idea of the mnemonic device, you know, the method for finding things. And strangely, oftentimes imitation is one of the ways to be the most original.
You know, I'm seeing at this time a lot of attention given to folks on YouTube that may be making parody songs that are wildly popular now, having to do with staying inside, washing your hands, you know, maintaining social distance. I'm wondering if you've come across any of those, either by aspiring, you know, creatives or by the performers themselves. You know, we have some of the members of the Knack, you know, singing "By Corona," and Neil Diamond with "Sweet Caroline," hands washing hands. I don't know if you've encountered any of those so far.
I have. The problem for me is that many of my allusions are so out of date that I don't always recognize what the parody is supposed to be of.
Gotcha.
I haven't kept up as well as I should. So I enjoy what I hear, but I don't get the richness of it because I just don't recognize what that song was in the first place.
Well, maybe going back to Shakespeare and some of those sonnets can be timeless for anyone who wants to do a parody or imitation. I want to ask, you know, you've been centered in the greater Tacoma area for a long time now. What's your favorite thing about Tacoma?
It changes. Because the city changes and because I change. And I suppose part of it is that it's a big enough city, big enough town, and there's enough going on so that you don't have to be stuck with the thing that you liked 10 years ago or 20 years ago or even last year. The whole waterfront, of course, is just a treasure, a jewel. Years ago, well, it would have been about 1990, I guess, when they established the new University of Washington branch, where I taught as an auxiliary faculty for 12 or 15 years. I thought that it was a dumb idea. That part of town was pretty run down, and I thought, why throw good money after bad? And I was dead wrong about it. There has been a renaissance in that area that is just unbelievable to me, and we love to go down there and visit the museums, visit the campus, the little shops and the little restaurants. I think it's just a really invaluable, and it keeps growing and changing, becoming richer and richer.
Well, wonderful words from Professor Richard Wakefield. Do you have anything else that you would like to share with our listeners today, like maybe how people can follow up with your work?
The collections of my poetry are available through Amazon and various places. The first was called East of Early Winters, published by the University of Indiana Press. And the second is called A Vertical Mile, published by Able Muse. And I'm pleased with those books. I think that, and then there's a lot of stuff now that's online. And frankly, I don't spend enough time online to know what all is out there. A suggestion that I'd make, this comes to mind because I've been communicating a lot with my colleagues, many of whom are new to the online environment. Is, you know, we're in a lucky situation, those of us who teach, because nothing we do is a matter of life or death at this point, not immediately. What we do is very, very important. But if you make a mistake in transferring your courses online, nobody's going to die or even particularly suffer. We can do this on the fly, and in fact, that's an opportunity to rethink what we do in ways that can be tremendously creative and constructive. I fully believe that many of us will end up doing our best teaching because of this experience that's knocking us out of our complacency. And I know none of us wants to think that we're complacent, but you've done anything very long, there are complacent parts of it. We get knocked out of that and we get better.
I think a lot of wisdom in that as well, especially coming from a similar kind of environment, although not higher ed, but K-12 education. A lot of us are feeling that. And it's really good to ground us and remember, you know what? We're trying our best and trying new things. And we look forward to lots of the things that will burgeon up from this experience once we all get through it. So, Professor Richard Wakefield, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and thank you.
Professor Wakefield is a poet, a literary critic, and a professor of English at Tacoma Community College.
For City of Tacoma non-emergency information, dial 311. Dialing 211 will connect you to statewide community resources. You can email us at daily@ktqa.org, or you can call and text us. Call or text us at 253-330-8821. See you next week, or see you tomorrow, if not earlier.
KTQA LP 95.3, Tacoma.